This is BFBS,
the Forces Station.
Gemma Lee James meets the Proclaimers.
BFBS, the Forces Station, and I'm Gemma Lee James, and I'm with the Proclaimers, probably best known for their iconic track, I'm Gonna Be. And with a career spanning almost 40 years, it is still going strong. They have just released their 12th album, and I sit down with them to have a chat about some of the most surprising people they've worked with, their catchy but honest songs, and battered Mars bars. If you're not a Proclaimers fan, after this music special, you probably will be.
So Craig and Charlie Reid, better known as Claimers, thanks for joining us on BFBS, of course, the station. I feel like I'm in royalty. Grew up listening to your music, seen you so many times at Hogmanay festivals. You've got a new tour in music along with a new album with a little bit of an unusual name. I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later on. But first, I want to take you right back to the start because you weren't always the Claimers.
No, we started off, I suppose, playing in bands when we were about 15, just with an old beat-up drum kit and guitar. And we had various bands. The Hippie Hasslers, I remember, was one of them. And then later on, I think it was Reasons for Emotion was our last band that we were in with another person. And then after that, we kind of got one. Economically, things weren't that great, so we were struggling to get money for rehearsal time. And also, we wanted to do something a bit more original. So we just paired it back to the acoustic guitar, Craig and I, and we called ourselves the Proclaimers after that.
I mean, so how did you start as the Proclaimers? You recorded a demo album with Kevin from Dex Days Midnight Runners.
We did actually a number of demos over a period of about 3 years. And one of them was with Kevin Rowland, went down to Birmingham. He got us some studio time when we did that. And he helped us quite a bit. You know, he got us in contact with publishers and record companies. And he kind of championed the cause, you know. But it did take a while. You know, I think we started as the Proclaimers at the beginning of 83. And we were kind of struggling for about 3 years. And then we got a tour with the House Martins at the end of 1986 around Britain and Ireland. And that kind of kick-started things. And then we met our manager, Kenny McDonald, about the same time. And things really started happening at the beginning of 87. And then we got signed, I think, early March of that year. And recorded the first album, the acoustic album, over about 9 days, and then that came out in the spring, and it kind of went on from there.
I mean, obviously, you're twins. I've got to ask you this. Do you stand, one of you's got to be on the left, and one of you's got to be on the right all the time? You know, a bit like Ant and Dec, or does it really matter?
I tell you the way it's worked out. We're generally now in position that we would be on stage. And the reason I would stand on stage left and Craig stage right would be that it's always easier so as you don't hit the guitar headstock off. If I was standing the other side and I moved, we would hit the guitar headstock potentially off Craig. So I think that's how it's always developed. Just that if I swing round, I'm not smashing him, if you know what I mean. In the old days when we were on tiny little stages and we're standing very close together.
I've got to ask you, who were your inspirations growing up?
When we were growing up, I suppose from the childhood, it was like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And then punk happened in Britain, 76, 77. And punk actually, Sex Pistols and The Clash, The Jam, The Buzzcocks, they were a big influence. Then people like Dexys, Midnight Runners. And I think by the time we were 18, 19, 20, we still had influences, but we were developing what we did ourselves, you know. But I think that the influences we had in early childhood and in mid-teenage years, they're probably the biggest on what we've done subsequently.
And did you always want to both do music, or did it take a bit of convincing from one of you?
Well, I suppose Craig was quicker on it than me, being sure that he wanted to do it from when he was quite young. And then late teenage years, we kind of moved away from the little village he grew up in. And like a lot of people at the time, didn't have much in the way of work. So you had plenty of time to think what you'd like to do. And then it kind of solidified into music in our late teens, early 20s. We were pretty sure.
And one of the things that obviously makes you iconic is your Scottish accents, and we can still hear that through your music, which is just wonderful. But back in the 80s, there were other Scottish bands like Simple Minds and Big Country who were also Scottish, but they chose to sort of lose their Scottish accent. Did you ever think that perhaps if it wasn't going to work out, that you might have to sort of go down the same route?
We never want to do that, and I've never criticised anybody for singing the way they want to sing. Entirely up to them. But for us, singing about our own experiences at our own time, it kind of felt better, more natural just to sing it in your own accent. There was very few people doing it anywhere at the time. You think maybe of Ian Dury and the Blockheads, and he's singing an Essex accent. But there was very few people that sung in what you would call regional English accents, or very few are still that sang in Scots. The only Scots accents you would hear would be in folk music. So we kind of took that and tried to make it, I suppose, modern folk music.
Great, I love it. I'm going to go back to your first single, Letter from America, which is about Scotland's history of immigration with Scots moving over to America. But what gave you the inspiration to write that?
Letter from America came from the time it was written in. And I think we wrote it 83 or 84. And it was a time when there was massive unemployment. It was getting worse by the week. Huge numbers of people were being laid off, especially in heavy industries. And that went over into all aspects of employment. And people were having to move away from Scotland, like they had done from the Highlands during the Highland Clearances. They had to move away because there was no work. It happened in other places, South Wales, North East England, Merseyside. But we were writing about the country that we knew, and it was basically Letter from America was contrasting and making sure that what people understood it was similar what had happened in the mid-19th century in rural Scotland and what was happening in the late 20th century, especially in up in Scotland.
And I'm sure that is a time that a lot of our listeners are going to sort of remember quite vividly. The song, you worked with Jerry Rafferty on that.
Yeah, we did. We initially recorded it on the first album, which was purely acoustic, just basically guitar, Craig and I singing a little bits of tambourine and stuff. And then we decided we'll do it as a single, and we thought there was more chance of getting played with backing musicians on the radio. So we re-recorded it with Jerry. He seemed an appropriate choice. He was enthusiastic about doing it. So we went down to his place down in the south of England, and we did some demos there. Then we moved to our studio for a day after that, and we, over the course of maybe a day, 2 days, we recorded it.
BFBS, the Forces Station.
Gemma Lee James meets the Proclaimers.
And I've got to talk to you about your most iconic song that everybody knows. I'm going to be a favourite Hogmanay or a Scottish wedding. Do you know what? I think it should be Scotland's national anthem. Do you know, it's got the intro that as soon as you hear it, the do, do, And you've just given us enough time to grab somebody, get them on the dance floor, and just have a real good time with it. I mean, the song has actually had a life of its own. Did you ever think that it was going to be successful and be sung at all these parties, like decades after?
I mean, we thought it was going to be successful and it was going to be a first single, right? So it came out off the album. But at the time, it wasn't anywhere near as successful as it's become. It didn't even crack top 10. I think it got to number 11. It hung around in the chart a long time and we sold a lot of albums on Sunshine and Leaf. But the song at the time was nowhere near as big a hit as Letter from America had been. So we kind of figured it's a lead track off the album. It's done okay. It was sold albums on it. That's all we were concerned about. The song, as the decades went by, became bigger than it was when it was released. So as you say, it took on a life of its own. It's kind of, it's way bigger than the band is or ever will be. But it keeps us touring around the world. That one single song that people might not know a lot of the other things that we've done, but they do know that song.
And can you remember where you were when you wrote it and your inspiration for writing it?
Yeah, I wrote it in a room in a flat we shared in Edinburgh. We started touring, we'd done the first album, we're doing a lot of shows and we were waiting to be picked up to be taken up to Aberdeen to do a show that night. I had about an hour and I was sitting at the electric piano and I wrote the whole thing, you know, about the whole thing in about 45, 50, 55 minutes, all the tune and all the words, which is unusual for me because it usually takes a longer than that, but it just kind of seemed to write itself very quickly. And we got that, and I think Charlie and I started playing it at gigs before we'd even recorded it. We played it acoustically and it went down well. And then we'd done the demos. I think everybody knew that that would be the first track to radio, the first single on that album, so that it kind of went on from there.
And of course, it was big in America because it was the theme tune in a film, Benny and June, starring Johnny Depp, very young Johnny Depp there. You didn't know that was going to be in the film, did you?
No, I mean, we basically, I suppose people come to you, they go to the publisher and say, we'd like to use it in this advert or this movie. We've had quite a few songs featured in films over the years. And then you think nothing more of it. And then suddenly I got a phone call from a journalist in America and she said, this is going to be a big record. And I was like, all right. I suppose it was in the 100 or something, the Hot 100. And she said, this is a top five record. And that's the first of anybody saying it. And I thought, wow. But she seemed very confident. The record just kept going up and up the charts. This is years after it was a hit in Britain and Europe. They sent us out to America to do a promotional tour. That would have been 1993.
It was also, sadly, it was banned on some radio stations due to the word haver, which is obviously a Scottish word, but yeah. They thought it meant something else.
Yeah, they didn't know what it was. They thought it might be something obscene or, you know, something to do with vomiting or something. I don't know what it was, but yeah, a couple of people had a problem with it.
It's a very Scottish word, haver. If anyone's listening and doesn't know what it means, tell us what it means.
Just talking nonsense, you know, blathering away, talking rubbish, just
talking too much.
Well, hopefully we're not doing that today, of course.
No.
Now, going back to what we said earlier, sadly, it didn't get to number one the first time round, but it was re-released. You did a cover for Comic Relief with Peter Kay and Matt Lucas. I want to know, how did that happen? Who called who?
And I think it happened because we'd done the G8 concert at Murrayfield, I think in 2005 or 2006, and we were the first thing on, you know, we literally went on 3 minutes at the start and got the crowd going, and Peter Kay was there that day, and I think he'd seen the crowd reaction and he was looking for another song to do on Comic Relief, and he thought, try that, and it was his idea to do that. And then Matt Lucas agreed. Matt Lucas is a longtime friend of ours and a famous fan, and he agreed to do it with David Williams as well. So, and it, you know, it became a big hit, and it finally got to number one.
Because you've got some big fans, obviously celebrity fans as well. David Tennant as well, he's a big follower of yours.
Yeah, he's a great guy. We didn't really know anything about him until he started breaking through as an actor, and then, you know, he became a massive star, quite rightly. He's a very talented guy and he seems to be able to turn his hand to any kind of actor. Not everybody can do that, so we got to know him through that, and he's been at quite a few concerts. When he was doing Doctor Who, he came along to the one in Wales at St David's Hall a couple of times when we were filming Doctor Who. He's been a great guy with us and he did a couple of interviews with us as well.
Trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents, no phone, no pool, no pets, I ain't got no cigarettes, all but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 4-bedroom. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. Third box car, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine.
union dues I smoke. Old stogies I have found. Short, but not too big around. I'm a man of means, by no means king of the road. I know every engineer on every train, all of the children. When no one's around, I sing trailer for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. I ain't got no cigarettes or but 2 hours of pushing broom. Buys an 8x12 4-bedroom. Mama, man of means, by no means king of the road. Trailer for sale or rent. Got the rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. I ain't got no cigarettes on, but 2 hours of pushing broom. Buys an 8x12 4-bedroom. Mama, man of means, by no means can go.
Now, Sunshine on Lee, your 1988 album, was turned into film in 2013. It's now also a theatre show as well. And if anyone listening doesn't know what it's about two soldiers, Davy and Ali, they come back from Afghanistan and they have to learn to live in Edinburgh. You must have seen the show so many times. I mean, what is it like seeing somebody sing your songs?
It's very strange. It's even now, I've seen it a few times, but the very first time I saw it, it was almost surreal, sitting in a theatre with a couple of thousand people and then have an actor singing your songs back from a stage, especially when it was female actors, you know, it was very strange. So yeah, it did a great job with it. Stage show and then the film, both of them were done really well. And the stage show's been out a few times. And there's a lot of amateur companies have done it all over the place as well. So we always thought we could have our songs sung by other people. But I think we never really imagined it as a stage show. We thought maybe other people covering their songs on their own records. But a stage show was something that we didn't really... It never came into our minds that our songs would be used for that.
It must have been quite a proud moment for you both.
I think it was, and you never take stuff for granted. If you've been lucky once or twice, and we've been lucky several times, big moments in our career, and I think maybe that was the top one, actually getting that, when they launched it as a musical, and it became a decent success. So very proud and very... very happy at her, continually.
And another proud moment for you must have been, well, you're big Hibs fans. Sunshine on Lee's connected with audiences over the years, but it's also been a football anthem for your football team.
That's right. It seemed to have been adopted around, it was 2001, at the same time as the 9/11 thing happened. We were out in America and Hibs were playing a European game against AEK Athens at home. And the supporters just seemed to start singing at half time, and it seemed to have become an anthem since then. So yeah, from 2001 onwards, obviously the song would be out since 88, but it just seems to have gone into the culture of the club. And particularly at the final, we weren't there, we were playing a gig in Salisbury. We watched it on the computer. Again, one of those never to be repeated moments, just one of the greatest days of my life.
My heart was broken. My heart was broken. Blindness, while I'm worth.
I've always thought it must be really weird for artists to go somewhere, the pub, supermarket, whatever, and hear your song in the background. Have you ever been somewhere just by pure accident and your songs have come on?
We played a gig in Amsterdam last Thursday night, and when we got out, got in the middle of Amsterdam, dumped all the stuff, and it was a couple of hours before a sound check, I went to get something to eat. It was a kind of Dutch Turkish restaurant, and there was a 1980s compilation being played, and it was all kind of stuff that was around there, and then I'm Gonna Be came on. So that was a bit strange. But there was a table load of Spanish ladies who were jigging around to it, but they didn't make the connection between the song and me sitting in the corner, thankfully.
Sometimes you go in a pub and somebody might stick it on a jukebox. Well, the pubs still have jukeboxes. Somebody sticks it on the jukebox. That used to happen a few times.
Oh, it must be an amazing feeling. Now, a lot of your music does reflect politics, especially sort of Scottish politics, like Cap in Hand, which was a song for Scottish independence. Tell us why you decided to write and perform that song.
It just came out. It was on Sunshine and Leith. I think it's a very varied subject matter on that album. There's some politics, there's some love songs. Charlie and I have supported Scottish independence our entire adult life, probably before that. It just came about, it was just people would ask you about it, and Scottish independence was nothing like as hot an issue in the mid late 80s as it is now, but we always said we were for it. That song just explaining what we felt and why we felt it.
And do you manage to sort of write songs together, or is there a few arguments? Do you ever sort of disagree about what you're going to write about?
If one of us doesn't like the song, we don't do it. We've both got to be happy with the song before we perform it.
You're still touring. You've got your own tour that's coming up towards the end of the year, but you're still doing all the festivals. You've done the Isle of Wight. You headline Chill Fest this year. I was there. It was a bit wet, but come on. Still had lots of fun. You got the crowd going. What is it like when you hear thousands of people repeating that song back?
It's great. And the fact that so often these people either weren't born when the songs were recorded or were children, and now that they're singing them, 30, 35 years later or something, it's a fantastic. As with people playing it on radio or the good luck we've had with people using it in films and stage musical, you don't ever get tired of it. Paul Heaton, that was in the Beautiful South, and previous to that had been in the House Martins when we'd met him. We did a couple of gigs with him this year in the north of England, St Helens and Doncaster. And to see his audience, who I guess maybe are a slightly similar audience to ours, singing along with it at somebody else's gig, that's a really great thing too.
What a fantastic feeling. Now, you have got a new album coming out on the 16th of September, followed by the tour, as I said. The new album is called Dentures Out. It's probably the most political album yet, certainly since Sunshine on Leith. First of all, I've got to ask you, how did you come up with the name?
I think it was the first song we wrote for this record. And it's basically kind of contrasting Britain with an old lady who's failing, who you see her with her dentures out when she's not really expecting it. And then she puts them in because she's going to tell you she loves nostalgia. And that song is about, it's really a song about Britain at the moment, Britain for the last 10 years or so. And the decline that Charlie and I see, the massive decline in Britain. As I say, it's basically saying Britain is turning into a toothless old crone.
So I had a little listen to the song. It's a bit of a happy clappy song. There is some Scottish words in there. Love it. There's about the dog. That's going to confuse the Americans, is it? Of course, that's Scottish for dog. But here it is, a brand new single from the album with the same name. It's Dentures Out.
She put them in and mumbled something indistinct, which might have been nostalgia, I love you. Britain's wise after the fact, you have to give the old lady time to react. And now that she has learned that facts aren't really facts, nostalgia, she loves you. See the ranks of non-achievers, where the look of true believers. Freedom's common and freedom's vanished. And watch the Spanish. Britain can seem slightly smug. She likes to drink a beverage from her own mug, with on it tied a picture of a tiny dog. Nostalgia, we love you.
That you did in lockdown?
It was, I tell you what happened was, I think we'd written 3, 4, 5 songs before the first lockdown. And then the first lockdown happened, and that, as it was for everyone, was an experience that none of us, nothing prepared you for it, and you'd never see anything like it. And I think there's a couple of songs that were written, a couple of the ballads on the record, Feast Your Eyes, that was definitely written in the early part of the first lockdown, and a song called Sundays by John Calvin, that was also written. It's not about lockdown. I intended, there was no way I was going to write about lockdown, but I think the feeling in them, the mood in them, was definitely reflective of the first lockdown.
Feast your eyes on the floor. Where's the pen you're looking for? It's there, where the pattern of the green meets a tea or coffee stain. When the dead visit you, do they ask what they should do? Or do they take their own advice like they used to do in life? Fine.
your eyes on the floor. Where's that pen that you've been looking for?
It's there, where the pattern of the green meets a tea or coffee stain. In the dust of yesterday, for a minute you can stay and watch this spider web.
Gemma Lee James meets the Proclaimers.
BFBS,
the Forces Station.
So there is a song that I listened to called The World That Was.
Yeah.
That's a little bit COVID inspired. I thought the start of it sounded a little bit sort of status quo to start with.
Status quo. <cool. laughs> Well, I think the producer and the band intended it to sound like the Rolling Stones, but if it's status quo, then that's good enough for me. Yeah.
That's good. I was a bit nervous, actually, about saying that. That was also one that you worked with another well-known artist on.
Yeah, that's right. We were James Dean Bradfield, who we didn't know. Obviously, we knew of him and his work with his band over decades now, you know, so... But I suppose it was our producer who knew him through his work with the Manics over a long time. I think almost from the Manics' first or second single that Dave was working with James. So they have a real, you know, a very close kind of brotherly type relationship. So it was him that brought James in, and James just laid a storm, you know. He's a great singer, but a fantastic guitar player as well. And so he featured on two of the tracks, and we were very, very happy that he came down. He's a great lad and he played fantastic, so that was great.
This is The Proclaimers, The World That Was, from the new album Dentures Out.
The world that was has now become a cause, inspiring simple souls all over, who have the knack of always looking back while drunk or even sober. What you may have often heard, there's been no death of satire. There's more, not less, when thank you NHS is painted on a Spitfire. The world that was has now become a cause all over.
Song that I really liked on the album, The Recent Past. Some of the songs are quite short. There's just over sort of 2 minutes. This is another sort of happy, clappy song. I love the line that you've got in there, 80s pop stars that thought they would last.
What it is I wrote that song thinking that sometimes you've got to write a song, you almost write it from two, certainly a couple of lines, you write it from two different directions, you know, and that was obviously 80s pop stars who thought they would last now at Butlins can be seen. There's plenty that acts now that do kind of 80s shows, do Butlins, do other places. We haven't done that, but there may come a day when we would have to do that. So that line is basically taking care of having a laugh at the 80s acts that do it and accepting that one day we may be one of those.
Nothing ages like the recent past, like 3D old Seabream. 80s pop stars who thought they would last, now at Butlins can be seen. And please keep it so. Please
recent past, those the people decided. Should wheel power just a few years ago, now are wholly derided. And we make it so, we make it so, we make it so, don't we? Ding, dong, Yvonne, not calling, seals falling, see, saw, rot, raw. Of what just occurred, if you'll give me a century, please keep it so. Please keep it so. Please keep it so for me, because we make it so. We make it so.
You're still living in Edinburgh. I was lucky to be there for 7 months when I was working for BFBS Scotland. Obviously, I'm from Aberdeen originally. Edinburgh, beautiful city. Dreadful potholes, I think. I don't know if you think the same. Now, being Scottish, I always get three things that people ask me. It doesn't matter where I am in the world. First of all, I get asked, where are you from in Ireland? Have you ever eaten a Mars bar? And do you know the Proclaimers? And I feel now that I can answer the third one.
So which question are you most offended by?
Do you know what? I'm going to put it out there that I quite like a battered Mars bar.
There you go. So now you we've established you're not Irish. You like a battered Mars bar, and you are now friends with the Proclaimers. So
it's official.
I don't know what to say about that. Really, I'm lucky you.
Do you get asked the same questions when you go overseas, or even in England, about Scotland?
Yeah, you do a bit, and that's fair enough. And I suppose people from Liverpool get asked about the Beatles, and people from Newcastle, get asked about the football team or about industry or whatever. So, I don't know. It never bothers me, really. There's a lot more to Edinburgh than the castle and the rock, and there's a lot more to us than just.
But at the moment.
Yeah, that's about to come to an end. The biggest theatrical performance at the moment in Edinburgh is trying to get the streets cleaned. The guys are back to work, but I think there's another strike coming. So it's been very noticeable how quickly, because Edinburgh at this time of year is so busy with so many tourists, and how quickly the refuse is built up in the streets. So that's not quite as pleasant.
Maybe another political song maybe about the strike.
I can't blame someone whose living standards have been knocked down for the last few years for trying to get trying to get a reasonable pay rise, particularly with what's coming with the incredible rise in the fuel costs. So my sympathy would be with the strikers on that, definitely.
I come. I'm bringing you.
Now, we are just running out of time, but I've got a couple more questions just to squeeze in. The UK is set to host Eurovision in 2023. Scotland might be in a chance for hosting it. What would you like your part to be in Eurovision? Would you like to be there hosting it, maybe singing in it?
I don't know. I think judging from previous years, I think we may be in Australia and New Zealand at that time, but I'm not sure. But the thing is to remember that the UK is only hosting it because Ukraine can't. So I would have thought that Ukrainian artists would have taken the lead, despite the fact it being hosted somewhere in the UK. I would have thought Ukrainian acts would have taken the lead in next year's show.
Just to wrap up, I've read in the news, have you heard about the Scottish obsessed couple? They've reached out to you. They want your blessing on their marriage because they've recorded 500 Miles. It's a little bit of a ballad. It's a little bit slower.
Yes, I mean, obviously, I don't know how much of a blessing non-religious people can give. We're neither Pope nor Church of England or Church of Scotland, so we can't really give them a blessing in the truest sense. But if they mean approval and the best wishes, then obviously we send them that fulsome terms. Yeah.
Shall we play them a little song? Here it goes. This is Let's Get Married.
I have no doubt.
Charlie Reid, better known as The Proclaimers. Thanks for joining us here on BFBS, the Forces Station. All the best with the new album, Dentures Out. It's out now. And of course, you've got your tour coming up as well. Great catching up with you.
Thank you very much, Jamalee.
Well, there is only one song we could finish with.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
When I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's going over you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door.
I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
Jamalee James meets the Proclaimers.